Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hi, and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of September 17th. This is Tim Reedy, online editor. I'm joined this week by Father James Martin, associate editor of America. Welcome, Father Martin.
Thank you. Good to be here.
We're going to be talking this week about Father Martin's new book, A Jesuit Off-Broadway. Father Martin, of course, is the author of My Life with the Saints, a book that was published about a year ago now, was it?
Mm-hmm.
And has sold upwards of 20,000 copies.
Oh, 35,000.
35,000 now, and won the Christopher Award. So has done quite well, and this is Father Martin's next book. And this book recounts Father Martin's involvement with the Labyrinth Theater Company and the Public Theater here in New York in the production of the play The Last Days of Judas Iscariot. Now, this play was authored by Stephen Adley Geirgus. Is that how you say his name?
Geirgus,
I'm sorry.
That's okay. He actually is pretty well known among the theater community in New York, and when I first got a call from him, I had never heard of him. I'd heard of some of his plays, Our Lady of 121st Street, Jesus Hops the A-Train. Many of them have religious themes, and so when I mentioned his name to a lot of my sort of theater aficionado friends, they knew him immediately.
Right. He's a native of New York, and I believe he went to Corpus Christi school.
He did, and even went to Xavier High School, Jesuit High School in New York. Yeah, exactly, for a while. Most of his plays deal with religion either kind of implicitly or overtly. So he's, as one theater person told me, he's God-haunted. So there's really a lot of, you know, religion in his old plays, his former plays.
Now, how did you first get in touch with him?
Well, it was funny. I first got a call from an actor named Sam Rockwell, whom people might know from movies like Galaxy Quest. He's in this new Jesse James movie that's right. coming out in October. And
Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. That was
exactly,
a good one, yeah.
Yeah. He does a lot of indie movies. And he had gotten my name from a Jesuit parish and called and said, I'm doing this new play and I'm Judas. Would you mind talking to me about it? And so I met with him, and, you know, he's a great guy, and we talked a lot about Judas. And then a week later, Stephen, the playwright, got my name from Corpus Christi Church. So they separately, you know, sort of triangulated me. And then one day, Stephen and Sam were at lunch, and Sam said, I met with this Jesuit priest. Stephen said, who is it? And he said, it's this guy, Jim Martin. He said, that's the same one I was told to meet. So we all sort of found each other that way. And that's kind of got my, that got me started with the whole company and with this whole play.
Right. And the book's tells the story about how you first met with Sam here at America House, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sam and I actually met during a Sunday afternoon, and he came in, and you know, he didn't come from a very religious background, so he had all sorts of questions about the Gospels and Jesus and Judas and the Apostles. And Stephen and I met over dinner, and then he subsequently would call me late at night. He's kind of a night owl, like a lot of these actors
yeah.
are, and I'd have these phone calls at 12 o'clock saying, tell me about Pontius Pilate, which was kind of funny, actually. And the next night, tell me about Caiaphas, tell me about despair, those kinds of things. So a lot of these themes, the play is called The Last Days of Judas Iscariot, and it basically is an imaginative sort of courtroom drama of Judas on trial for Jesus's execution. And they have a lot of expert witnesses that are called, which is why he needed to know so much about the Gospels.
Okay, and the way that you tell this story is by recounting your encounter with these two artists, and then also kind of giving some background for the reader about all of these questions that they're asking. So you bring in Raymond Brown and other scholars and what they have to say about it.
Yeah, the book works on three levels. There's the story of the development of a play. So basically, you know, how's a play put together? There's, as you say, the subject material. So, you know, what do we know about Judas? What do we know about the historicity of the Gospels? And then also I interview the actors about their own spiritual lives. But yeah, a lot of the book is a lot of stuff about the historical Jesus, which is kind of an avocation of mine.
Right. You write that in the book, that this has been an interest of yours for a long time. So it fit well within this in this production.
Yeah. Luckily, I always tell them, luckily for them, this was something I was really interested in. And I love sort of delving into the historical background of Jesus and the possible reasons and explanations for Judas's betrayal of him, those kinds of things, which I just find fascinating. And, you know, eventually that got folded into the material of the play. And so it was pretty interesting to be able to see the results of these conversations, these early conversations with Stephen and Sam, be translated onto a Broadway or off-Broadway stage.
Yes, there was one particular insight about Judas's motivation that really became kind of the genesis of the play.
Yeah, there's a scripture scholar named William Barclay, who is a Scottish scripture scholar who taught at the University of Glasgow, who sifts through the different possible explanations about why Judas did what he did. And he said, really, the only evidence that fits the facts, i.e. that Judas hung himself, was that Judas must have been trying to force Jesus into acting, you know, into sort of responding to the Roman threat. So Barclay's idea is that Judas was trying to force Jesus to kind of respond and cause this revolution. And by delivering him into the hands of the Romans, he would ensure that. So I told that to Sam, and he said, well, it's kind of like, you know, Judas was throwing Jesus into the deep end, you know, see if he could swim, see what he would do. And I really did like that. And I mentioned it to Stephen, the playwright, and he liked it so much, he put it in the mouth of one of the actors. And so that's the kind of approach that the play really uses, that Judas was trying to help Jesus in a way. Although one of the other actors in the play actually sort of makes fun of that and says, yeah, that's really helpful, you know, getting Jesus crucified. So it's a really interesting, he uses comedy and he uses some really sort of interesting street language, as it were. I mean, it's written in a kind of contemporary street language with, you know, some obscenities thrown in from time to time to get this story across and to get some of these rather deep theological questions across in a kind of contemporary way.
Yes, I mean, I think that's his approach, that a lot of these questions have been asked and discussed so much that in order to make them new, you have to find a different way into the material. And he obviously did it by using this, you know, sometimes obscene language that I saw the play and it was quite shocking at times, but it's often very funny. And also, you know, there were some good insights there too.
Yeah, and you just hear things a little differently. I mean, there's a great line that people really liked when he's talking about Pontius Pilate. And Pilate comes on as a witness, and he's cross-examined by the defense and the prosecution. And, you know, on one hand, you hear Pilate saying, well, you know, I was just doing my duty, basically. On the other hand, you hear him sort of being castigated for, you know, just turning this man over to execution. You know, that you knew that this guy was innocent, et cetera. One of the attorneys says, you didn't wash your hands, Pontius Pilate, referring to his famous action of washing his hands. History did it for you. So the idea that history has kind of covered up some of Pilate's sinfulness, which I thought was a really good insight, and frankly, one that I'd never heard before. So in a very sort of simple and sometimes shocking way, you get these great insights. And I think that's all about enculturation. He's taking the story and he's enculturating it for basically an urban contemporary audience, and he's speaking in a language that people can understand.
Right. Now, this play, just to recount for our audience, was staged in the spring of 2005 mm-hmm. at the Public Theater, which was founded by Joseph Papp, right?
Correct.
Also the founder of the Shakespeare in the Park Festival mm-hmm. down in Lower Manhattan. And this was a large cast, right?
It
was
very big.
How many people?
I think 15 people, which wow. I had never really worked on. I mean, part of the story is kind of fish out of water or Jesuit out of water. I had never really worked on the theater before, and I'm not an actor, obviously. I never did any of that in sort of high school or college. And I didn't know that 15 is quite big, apparently just in terms of logistics, but also in terms of paying them, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a pretty big cast, which was kind of fun in the end.
And it was directed by Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yes, that's probably the most well-known name associated with this production. He was the director. He's the guy people probably know from Capote, the movie. He won the Academy Award for Best Actor.
Of course.
And, you know, one of the great things about working with him is that he came from a religious background and was very interested in all these questions about Jesus and Judas. His sister belongs to an evangelical church. And one of the things I say in the book is how sort of frustrated he gets when people try to belittle Christians as kind of anti-intellectuals. So he was really invested in this project. And the other thing I want to say is that he himself, even though he was the more well-known of these people, was probably one of the most humble. I mean, he was very down to earth. And, you know, one of the things I learned from these actors is that they're very humble. I mean, very few of them talked about, I'm in this movie or I'm in that movie or I'm doing this TV show. That was just like, I have this job coming up. And I guess for a lot of them, they get used to that. But their humility was really a revelation to me.
And a lot of them are people that our audience would recognize. You might not know their name, but they've been in a lot of TV shows and movies, et cetera.
Yeah, and it's funny. When they came, when friends of mine would come, they would say, oh, I know that guy from HBO's The Wire or Oz or Law and Order. And yeah, they're
a lot of HBO stars.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, a lot of these New York actors especially get all these roles on Law and Order and CSI right. and stuff like that.
So, We're the only two New Yorkers who have not been on those shows.
That's right, so far.
So far, right. You have a better chance than I do.
That's right. Law and Order, Society of Jesus.
So this play staged in the spring of 2005, and you've since become friends with this group of folks and are now a member of their company. Right?
Yeah, believe it or not, they made me a member, which I thought was kind of funny. And I say to people now, I have this new role at American Magazine as acting publisher, and I say the only acting I'm doing is as acting publisher. But yeah, and they invited me up to their summer workshops, which is where they, quote unquote, workshop. I didn't even know that term before, but where they sort of practice and rehearse these new plays that they're doing. And you know, I give them spirituality workshops and things like that. And my role basically moved from being theological advisor to kind of chaplain as the performance started, as the run started. And then finally just as their friend, you know, so now I just know them as friends. And they're really a great group of people. I found that actors, at least this group of actors, are very affectionate, very spontaneous, very loving, and, you know, really lively, too. So it's been a real blessing in my life.
And very supportive of one another and of their work. You know, Stephen is someone, as you write in the book, who sometimes has difficulty producing material on mm-hmm. time, but they're all very supportive, and they understand who he is and that, you know, he can produce great work, but, mm-hmm. you know, they just have to bear with him a bit.
Yeah, and, you know, I use the image of the body of Christ. I mean, you know, as the church is made up of many members which support one another, these actors, too, support one another. Interestingly, in the company, in the Labyrinth Theater Company, the actors, everyone is encouraged to do different roles that they're not accustomed to. So, for example, an actor will be encouraged to direct. A director will be encouraged to write, and a writer will be encouraged to act, which I think is great. It's this sort of creative environment. You know, I didn't realize when I got involved with them how, I guess, respected they are in New York. You know, they're one of the more respected theater companies. You know, it was funny. A lot of friends of mine who I know who are actors, you know, after I got involved in that, said, wow, you know, you really landed with a great group of people. You know, they're the group that I want to get into, or the ones that people really look up to. And I think because of this kind of creative ferment that goes on and this encouragement that really goes on, because I think for actors, you know, it can be really difficult business, especially in New York City.
Yeah, dealing with the reviewers and the audiences who might not be happy with the work, you really need the support of one another.
Yeah, and a bit of like a little bit of sort of careerism, you know, in other companies where a lot of competition, you know,
right.
And they find this that the fact that they have kind of a supportive creative home is really helpful for them.
Right. It helps them even in other lines of work, mm-hmm. you know, when they're doing other jobs mm-hmm. that they have each other to count on.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you said another layer of this book are the discussions you had with the various cast members about their own spirituality. Did you what were some of the surprising things you found?
Well, one of the surprising things I found was that, you know, very few of them were kind of overtly Christian. I don't know why. I guess I thought, you know, they'd all be familiar with this story. Some of them were not. You had people who were Buddhist, lapsed Catholics, sort of no religious background, devout Christians. It really ran the gamut. And I talk about my discussions with the actors about their own spiritual lives in the book, and I realized when I was writing the book that they really represent a kind of microcosm of the United States, of American spirituality. I mean, sort of from soup to nuts. The other surprise, to sort of put things into perspective for me, was that I think I expected after they spent all this time with the book that suddenly they'd all become Christian, or they'd all want to sort of, you know, get baptized and say, oh, Father, I'm ready. But I realized that the story of Jesus affected them in different ways. You know, it moved them along their spiritual paths, but you know, it was a lot more complex than, okay, now I want to be Christian. You know, for a person who was sort of struggling with the church, it may have moved them a little closer, you know. For the person with no religion, it may have at least opened them up a little bit to the story of Jesus. But there was really no person in the book who was not affected by this continual six-month exposure to the story of Jesus. A lot of them said they'd never really thought of Jesus as a real person, you know, or the saints sure. as real people. So, you know, just that was a revelation for them.
And we should note that the play does include, in addition to Judas and Jesus, characters who are saints, who have monologues that are quite funny, some of them, but like St. Monica, for example.
St. Monica, in Stephen's kind of portrayal of her, is the one that Judas asks to plead his case to God. And so Judas is sort of stuck in hell. He's condemned there for betraying Jesus. He appeals to St. Monica, and in his portrayal, she's this kind of tough-talking, as she says, nag, you know, because we know that Saint Monica was very persistent in her prayer. And she says, you know, in the play, if I wasn't a nag, you know, you wouldn't have any father of the church named Saint Augustine, so I'm glad to be a nag. And, you know, she's very kind of in your face, and it's kind of surprising that, you know, you have Monica, who's dressed in a sort of a light blue pantsuit with silvery boots and her hair up and sort of speaks with a slight Puerto Rican accent coming down. It's quite shocking, and it's in a good way, and it really wakes you up that, you know, this is what Monica does. Monica is this sort of persistent prayer. She says, you know, I nag so much I have full three full-time assistants up here to help me, you know. So I thought it was pretty funny, actually.
It is funny. And it's true. It's grounded in, you know, the church's history and tradition.
Yeah, and also I think, you know, one of the ways he uses that humor is, as St. Ignatius says, sometimes it's important to go in through your door and out through the other person's door in order to lead a person where you want them to go. So what the playwright is doing, what the play is doing, is sort of leading people in through this kind of very humorous door. You know, look, there's St. Monica. She's very funny. Some of these lines are very funny. And then making a point, the point being that, you know, persistence in prayer is really important at them, and that Monica really cared for her son Augustine. So I think it's a very clever and very, you know, effective way of making these theological points, and points that I think people would just say ho-hum if you just stood up and told the story of St. Monica. I think that would really just kind of turn people off. He does it in a way that's really appealing and kind of provocative too.
Interesting. I just received in the mail a notice from the Public Theater, and I see Stephen has a new play coming out next spring, I guess.
The Little Flower of East Orange,
East Orange,
New Jersey.
That was a great title.
It's a great title, and it's based on his mother. It's also very funny, and believe it or not, I had seen it in the summer workshops about 2-3 years ago, and you know, because of this encouragement of people doing all sorts of different things, he cast me in one of the roles.
Oh.
Yeah, in one of the readings. I was a young male visitor number one, had about 6 lines. It was interesting, and one of the people that read, you know, the roles was Philip Seymour Hoffman. So when I came back, I said, well, I was in a play with Philip Seymour Hoffman, and you know, that's the first time I've acted since high school. It's a really charming play. You know, Stephen tends to take a long time to write his stuff, and so he's been working on it for a while, but it also has religious themes. There's a very funny scene where his mother, or the mother in the play, is comatose. It's a woman who's in the hospital, who's sort of dying, and she's visited by the spirits of John the 23rd and Bobby Kennedy, and they come and they talk to her, and basically they say, "How could you have possibly voted Republican?" That's what they're very angry about that. So you know, it's kind of funny, and I'm looking forward to seeing it in its final incarnation.
Well, Jim Martin, thank you again. The book is A Jesuit Off-Broadway, published by Loyola Press, and this is now in bookstores. People can get this on Amazon.com.
And in your local bookstore.
And your local bookstore. Well, Father James Martin, thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure.
This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.